Well, joining us today on the Disruptive Voices of the Pacific, I'm so excited because two of my most favourite, well, I shouldn't say that, should I? Not a lot of
It's not
favourite
true.
Fijians. My favourite mother-daughter duo, who are no strangers to this podcast. I've had them both on several times, Miss Melanie Atora and Queen Mother Liliana. So nice
Hello.
To see your faces. Haven't seen
Yes.
you for about 4 months, so
I know. We miss you, Tish.
Yeah.
We really do.
Having withdrawals, but we'll be back soon. Now, look, I have been interviewing different people who have been contributors to this book, Sex, Dating, Relationships. Melania has a brilliant chapter, which I'm hearing so much good feedback. And then my number one supporter, Liliana. You know, every day she sends me a voice message because at the moment I am training to ride my bike. And every day I get a message, keep going, do this, because I've wanted to cry many times because I've been training in minus 6 degrees to raise funds for this book. Two of these women keep me going. So thank you for your time today. We're going to have a bit of a chat about dating. Now, both of you came to our BMS camp. You were at our BMS camp earlier this year where you did a great session as a mother and daughter, just how differently your views on dating has been growing up. And if you read the book, you'll read Melania's inspirational chapter of how she's chosen to do dating. Liliana, your life as a teenager and in your 20s and dating was very different. Maybe just give us an explanation of what was going on in your head, what you thought dating was back then.
Well, you know, to put it quite simply, I equated dating to sex. Sex was part of the whole dating situation. And I think because I didn't really, I had never dated. Like I was in boarding school and I didn't have a boyfriend all through boarding school, but I had friends who did. And it just seemed like that was what happened. And then when I came out into tertiary, it was happening all around me. And there was really no one that said otherwise. It was just go to the club, see somebody, and a date ends up, you know, having, you know, intercourse and being that type of intimate. So I have not had the experience of any other type of dating.
Okay, so where did you get that from, that notion that dating and sex were the same?
It's just because that's all I saw. You know, I read books where, and I saw movies where there was this whole courting and going to dinner, but there was none of that. I did have some dinners, but it was like, the expectation was always that, and I went into a lot of these situations quite innocently, honestly. Like even I just assumed that would, you know, we'd have dinner, but then as it went on, I kind of realized, okay, the expectation is that I'm going to put out, and then I mean, those who know me well know that I get stuck in these kind of situations, and then I feel too bad to say, guys, no, that's not what I wanted, and then I end up just going along with it because I didn't know how to say no. And then I was like, oh, maybe that's what's supposed to happen. And then I didn't know who else to talk to about it because the people around me that I could see were doing the same thing. So I think that's where I just thought it's just what I saw happen.
And of course there was no book back then.
No.
At all. So, okay. So that, you know, created quite a complex dating relationship. Which then you found yourself pregnant to a beautiful young woman, though.
Yes.
Fantastic. So not all is doom and gloom.
That's right.
At all. And we've, a lot of us have heard your amazing story, but it's interesting, isn't it? And Melanie, how much do you think that thinking still exists today among your generation?
I definitely think so. I think it's been a huge... I think it's even gotten worse. I mean, it's just the expectation that, you know, when you're dating, you're going to have sex. And I think that's also kind of helped a lot of girls to, well, not a lot of girls, but like now I'm realizing a lot of girls don't want to get into relationships because of there's that expectation. But also just like talk to men in general, because there's always that, like, it's outside the bounds of a relationship now. Like, this casual hookup culture that we have now, it is so prevalent, and I think now it's gotten even worse, that expectation of that transaction, and sex, like in exchange for like spending time together or having that person's attention and earning that attention. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and we did a podcast with you last year on I guess your view on dating, and so how did it change so dramatically in one generation? From your mother, who grew up thinking dating was sex, and then how did you change? Because your people go back and listen to our podcast. We won't go through it all now, but you're waiting to kind of meet someone decent before you date them. And you're saving sex till marriage. What changed for you then? Where did you learn that point of view?
Yeah, well, it wasn't always like I'm gonna wait till marriage, you know, like I'm gonna save myself, like some sort of noble cause that I'm putting myself down for. I think seeing the relationship trauma that my mom went through, and that my parents went through, they went through a very, like, obviously a rough time. They're divorced now, and so seeing the hurt that came from that, and also how hurt I was during the whole thing by my father. And just the whole split in itself, I think really had me, I guess, stuck to I'm just going to keep myself alone. It wasn't even I'm keeping myself for marriage. It's like I don't want to be rejected by any man anymore, so I'm just not even going to try. And then it wasn't again until like 2021 where I fully surrendered my life to the Lord, where I was like, I might be open to, you know, like slowly baby steps open to like letting someone into my life, and finally like trying to see what a relationship is like. And now obviously I'm waiting for my husband, so there's no more inhibition. No, I'm just waiting. But yeah, it wasn't like a positive response, and it wasn't like somebody had continuously, like, mom, obviously she told me to just beware of the type of men that are out there. But I mean, parents say stuff to daughters all the time, and it didn't really carry as much weight as the experience that she went through.
So basically, she was traumatized into this thinking.
Basically, yeah.
Not at all.
Lulu Bengal.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's the pain in our lives that teaches us, doesn't it? And I think we're smart when we can look at other people's lives. But I know a lot of healing has come through your journey for both of you too.
I think I'll just add to this, like, I think a lot of it too is we're quite open in the way we converse. And now she's at the age where, you know, some of her girls her age have children already. And as a single woman, sometimes she goes through, like, for those of you who think that Melanie is just happily sailing along single, like, she still has those moments where, like, is my husband really gonna come? And, you know, maybe I've missed him, and maybe, you know, so because we have that kind of relationship, and I've learned a lot from the mistakes I've made, I've been really open in sharing with her. Like, I remember a time when people around me were all like, boys would just seem to be falling over themselves for them, and I was wondering, what is wrong with me? And we were just talking about this in the weekend, and I said to Melania, I've learned that when you're accessible, when boys pick up that you're accessible, they come onto you, like, they come onto you a lot more. And because I grew up in a very conservative home, I did not, you know, I was very similar to Melanie as she is now, like, just a little bit awkward with boys. And so when boys pick that up, right? So they kind of like will go for the easiest thing that's available. And I was thinking something is wrong with me. But then I got into alcohol and all of that, like, really quickly, and then became accessible, if you like. So I was, Millie and I were just talking about it over the weekend, and I was just encouraging her, like, there's nothing wrong with you. And when the right man comes along, he will recognize that. And, you know, you won't feel pressured. You won't feel like you have to put out. Hopefully that's given her some kind of confidence in the path that she's chosen. So, yeah.
Definitely. I think after, now that I have like established that I want to date intentionally to marry, mom is like a huge like part of keeping my spirits up. Like, Because, you know, I mean, as you would know, Letitia, like in your singleness, you get discouraged multiple times. It's not always like, I love being single, I love my independence. And so the fact that she is there to encourage me and just to also remind me how detrimental it is to get into a wrong relationship or relationship that's not for you, I think is really helpful to me in this season. Thanks, Mom. Love
You're
you.
welcome, Lubengo. I'm glad my
Yes.
experience can be useful.
Yeah, look, and I guess my line of work, I've watched a lot of heartbreak in women, and you do think, oh, I'd much rather be single than go through that. However, God still uses it all in our life. I think for me, the hardest thing has been all my friends getting married, and I'm kind of the last one standing. But then even in that, God's still good at providing you Fijian friends. Which is lovely. Okay, Melanie, now you helped edit this book. Thank you. You were an absolute lifesaver. So you've read it, multiple times over and over. I mean, every dot and comma. Do you have a favorite chapter?
Oh my gosh, I really love the breaking up well chapter. I have personally never broken up with anyone in my life, but I just think that it's such a useful chapter because it talks about, you know, the things that we don't really talk about, like how do you leave people? How do you respect people and make sure that there's like a positive end to things, and also that they don't have to like suffer more trauma going into their next relationship, how to just end it as healthily as possible. I found a lot of value in that chapter.
Hopefully you'll never need it.
Hopefully.
But yeah, no, I really enjoyed that one as well. And Liliana as well, you've read it, and thank you for you've been promoting around the place. As a parent, have you found it? I mean, you're already on the ball with your two kids and speaking to them honestly, but for most parents, how can they use this as a tool with their kids?
Well, first of all, I think before parents give it to their children, they should read it first, because a lot of, things are opening. And a lot of us parents, we went through all of these, there's some great stories in there, and we never experienced, I mean, we've experienced some of that ourselves. The part I really like is the red flags and the green flags. And until I read it, I just thought, man, I wish I had. Well, now Melanie is, thank God, God has, raised her like this. But I just thought it was so useful to for parents to even drop into conversations or to identify, but also to give parents awareness of what is actually happening out there. Because I think we go through our own experience and we kind of think like, okay, that happened then, it's not happening now. Like things are happening a lot worse, if you like, than when we were younger, and we all have like these crazy stories of being promiscuous and all of that. So first, I would encourage the parents to read it first. It's a bit difficult for me to say talk about it, because it really depends on what kind of relationship parents have with their children, because you can't just read the book and then decide you want to pick up a topic and talk about it at the dinner table. That it just won't work. Your children will freak out and they'll probably close up even more. If anything, if I would say to parents, if you do have a great relationship with your kids, then that's fine. By all means, bring it up in the normal forums that you would do or the spaces that you create for your children. But if you don't have that, I recommend read it, but then just be alert to what's happening. I always found that Melania went through a phase where she was, like a normal teenager, didn't want to talk to me. She's just quiet. She just like, and I was annoyed, but one of the things I learned was just to be present. Like, just to be, when the kids were around, I don't even know whether they remember this. They probably didn't even realize what I was trying to do. But I'd make sure that I wasn't sitting on my phone, that I'd just be around so that they'd just see me around. And if there was ever something that they needed to talk to me about, they'd look up and I'll be like, present. Present, not standing there like I'm here, guys. But I feel like it makes a really big difference, because our kids, if they've got something to talk about, they look and they see us on the phone, particularly the phone, because our parents get stuck in it too. They won't bring it up. But I am 100% sure that there's going to come a time when our kids are going to go through something And if they see us, you know, combined with our prayers, like God is going to bring that opportunity, but we need to be prepared and ready and present. I think present is my biggest message to any parent. Like, be there, not on your phone. Like, because when the kids come down into the living area, if they're around when they at that stage of their lives, if they were around me, like, I don't want to be holding my phone. I don't want to look. I just want to look available. Like, mom's here. I'm just sitting here. But yeah, so I think that's kind of where I go with that, because it really, if you have not built that relationship with your children, then this book is going to, it, you know, in a lot of ways can be a wasted resource for your parenting journey, which will be sad.
Yeah.
Does that answer?
Yeah, no, that's great. And I mean, it is a good point, because you just, if your kids don't want to listen to you, they don't. But I guess when I look back on my parents, it's what they did more than what they said. So I
yeah.
learned healthy relationships, but what they did. Now, not everyone has a mother and a father together in a home, but
yeah.
I love, you know, even in your situation, you have been honest about your mistakes. So I think, you know, for parents, and I've heard Fijian young people say, I wish my mother would just tell me the honest truth. You know, I wish she'd just be, I know she's suffering. I know she's been through things. So they can learn, like Melania has, learned through what we've done wrong as well, which is so important.
Yes.
Yeah. But also, I think there's a lot of good information in here for older people. You know, there's nothing too late, is there?
That's right.
Relationships as well. Melanie, you are a youth leader at your church. You know, how important is a resource like this for young people today?
Oh, it's extremely important. You know, I just realized that no matter what generation you're in, young people have more or less the same questions, especially when it comes to relationships. One of my kids messaged me, one of the kids in my youth messaged me the other day, and he was like, how do I know that I'm ready to date? And it was a beautiful opportunity to be able to explain that and like talk about the book a little bit. And they all have the resource. We gave them the book, so they're really happy about that. And I've gotten really good feedback from the kids. But I think it's just, you know, those questions that even if you do have a good relationship with your parents, you're just a bit too shy to ask.
Right.
Especially in those teenage years. Like, no matter, mom was so open with me when I was a teenager, but I would never in my life ask her about, what do I do when I like a boy, and how do I know this, and how do I know that? It's just not that, like, I in myself was just not confident enough to say that. So I think that resources like this can help not only the shy ones, but just kids in general who aren't really there yet in their relationship with their parents to ask those hard questions, and they don't have the proper resources from school or whatever. Yeah.
And that's a good point. Like, just, I hope parents caught that. Like, even though, like, for someone like me who, you know, came in that phase, I was so intentional and wanted to do all the right things. Sometimes the kids just won't talk to you.
Yeah.
And so we were really lucky to that, you know, planted in a church where there's other people. And I've met people who have taken offense when their kids go to other people. Like, that's a gift. Like, we need, they always say it takes a village. And so, as long as we get to choose, you know, put it, that village needs to be a good village. And so, you know, being planted in a good church is so critical to this journey. Like, she's met people, she's, you know, I've got friends in the church who she is comfortable enough to ask. So just, that's a great point, Melania, because I don't want people to think that I was creating all these spaces, that you used all these spaces all the time, because you're absolutely right. There's still some things that you're not comfortable to tell mom about. So. Good one.
Yeah, no, it's good. What about, I mean, Liliana, we did a podcast probably a couple of years ago after we'd, I think, been to one of the girls' schools and listening to what they were saying about sex. And there's a pushback in Pacific culture that we don't talk about these things. You know, what's this white lady doing, bringing up these white things?
Yeah, disrupting everything.
I know. How important is it that we, I mean, it's got nothing to do with nationalities. It's all in the Bible, is what I tell people. But how important is it as a culture, for the sake of the next generation, that we can have some really honest conversations?
Yeah, man, I don't even know how to describe in words that importance, because I think we're so busy trying to have this taboo, you know, we don't talk about those things all out loud, and that's disrespectful, or whatever reason we have. But meanwhile, our children are getting pregnant. They're getting, you know, they're getting so frustrated and depressed by all the situation around them. You know, we've seen in our papers the drug situation is, you know, through the roof. HIV has gone crazy, and yet we're still saying, let's not talk about it. I mean, just the other week, the girl had her baby in FNU and put it in the toilet bin thing, the sanitary bin. Like, all of this has gone from bad to worse, and still we're like, shh, don't ask. And when we went to BMS, and these Form 3, Form 4 students asking me about what is a BJ, like what is a blowjob, I almost like saying, I was like, what? My goodness, did we say ask anything? But I was just in shock. Like when I was that age, I didn't even know what that was. But this is, it just really concerned me, because if the boys or whoever is telling them, and their parents are not talking about it, they're not in a ch churches. We know very well churches are not talking about this, you know. Bless everyone who is trying to do the best they can. But can you imagine saying the word sex from the pulpit? That's just a no-no. And so it's sad, because we profess to be followers of Christ, and we've said like at least 70% of our population will say that they're followers of Christ, but yet look at the state of our society. It's just ridiculous. It doesn't add up. People from outside the country come in and be like, what is going on here? Aren't you supposed to be a Christian community? And so, like, going back to your question, like, it's like really the future of our society depends. I think we're at a desperate stage now where we have to find a way to talk about it. We don't have to broadcast it out, but maybe even in our churches, make spaces. Maybe even in our, you know, our, maybe if you have friends who have children, make spaces. Like spaces, these spaces are so important. But I think different things will work for different places, but if only all of us could take some kind of responsibility to just look around us and say, you know, what can I do here? Maybe there's two or three. Maybe I can reach out to Miss Hibiscus and she might want to come and do a small group. Like there's people around. Like we're just so accessible now with technology. We really have no excuse. If you're a parent or you're an older sibling or something and you don't know what to do, or even if you're in that situation, I reckon even message Letitia, like just make use of the resources we have and then just connect and we can. But yes, it's absolutely critically important, Tish.
Yeah, it is. Look, our time's almost up. But
We've been
Melanie,
talking.
you've been talking. Time goes fast when you're
Sorry.
having fun. No. Yeah, Melanie, you have been so vocal around mental health issues, which is closely linked, to our sexual promiscuity. Again, has been linked to depression, low self-esteem. So what part of, speaking up on these issues do you think can help create a healthier mental health for young people?
Oh gosh. I was just thinking about this the other day when I was thinking about what actually is in the book about my story. And I was like, this is actually really embarrassing for me to admit that I've like never been in a relationship and this, that, and the other. I mean, for you know how you tell your story and you're like, oh gosh, actually, this isn't a normal story. And like my youth kids are gonna be reading this and someone else is gonna be reading this and everybody knows who I am. But I love that we're given this story to be able to help people. And the fact that like, the more of us that are comfortable with raising our voices and being embarrassed, and being okay with being embarrassed about the choices we've made, about the things that have happened in life, the more people get set free. And so I think it's so important for everyone to really, because everyone has a story, to be comfortable with the embarrassment of sharing their testimony for the greater good of our people, because
Yeah, that's good.
everybody can relate to someone in some way. And so, it coming back to the mental health part, it's absolutely crucial not only to share your story for others, but just to share your story for yourself, because just saying it and verbalizing your experiences has an effect on you mentally. Like it de-stresses you, it releases all those, those emotions, that burden that you had on you when you kept it inside. And that's been the story. Oh my gosh, it's like over everyone I've ever spoken to, whether in a counseling session or not in a counseling session, even with the girls at BMS through Bella Girl, every single girl who has shared their story in small group has just visibly become lighter after sharing their experience.
Yeah, that's so true.
And so it's one of those things where the positive effect on your mental health is almost immediate. You can see it as soon as you see it. So I think it's so important.
Yeah, it's good.
We were never meant to carry our burdens by ourselves. But thank you for your bravery, because it's one thing to share your story, but to see it in writing is a whole nother thing. And it can be really confronting, but thank you. Thank you to both of you. As I said, this resource is not about me. It's about a whole big team of amazing leaders in Fiji, male and female, young and old, just like yourself. So it wouldn't have happened without you. So thank you. And we're looking forward to rolling out thousands of these across the nation towards the end of the year after I've ridden my bike. So God bless.
Thanks, Tish.
I love you and leave you, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Easily, I see your suffering. I see the pain beneath that bullet smile. Come out from hiding. The sun is rising. Let the islands hear Isolde cry.